You're listening to Packers Talk Network. Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Rodgers will go conventional, and he will do it himself. Touchdown, Packers! Aaron Rodgers into the end zone.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the eye.
Guess who's back? So they tried to address the problem, but so far, like you said, nothing.
I guess the bright side is it happened early enough on that there's time.
What are you talking about? We're going to talk about the pass rush. You can't talk about what's not there.
If we don't start pushing that pocket back and getting some pass rush, we're going to tear the secondary
running. Seats in the bowl at Lambeau will definitely outweigh the demand for seats.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Cheesehead Radio, part of the Packers Talk Network. We are honored to join you today for a very special Kramer for Hall of Fame Day update on Friday, July 8th. My name is Jamie Snowden, and I'm joined tonight by CD Angeli. We are missing Jersey Albracco because he is manning Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Central. And John Rahor is not going to be with us this season because he's off ranting in his basement by himself. So it's just me and CD with you today to bring you some past interviews with Jerry Kramer and his daughter Alicia and some updates on how you can help the Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame campaign. CD, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. This is a big day. A big day for Jerry Kramer and Alicia, both of whom have been great fans of the show, have been part of our show for many years. Jerry Kramer just was an incredible offensive lineman, has actually been called the best offensive lineman on those Lombardi teams. And for some odd reason, he's not made the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, I don't know why that could be, Jamie.
Because they're difficult people. I mean, no, they're wonderful people.
They're wonderful people.
Respectful and nice, too, when you're writing your letters.
Exactly.
But I think some people get stuck in their ways of, well, if they didn't nominate him the first time, it's not up to us to change the original votes. Some people just didn't like his books, and some people just decided that there was too many Packers from that team on in the Hall of Fame, and we'd had enough.
And, of course, you can never have too many Packers. That is rule.
That you can't. I don't know who raised these people. That was one of the first lessons my mother taught me, so...
Well, one thing that makes this very important is that this is Alicia Kramer. If you've not met her, this is Jerry's daughter. I've never met a bigger advocate for someone's dad in my life. She has really made it her mission years and years and years to try to get her dad into the Hall of Fame. She has announced, this is at 2016. This is her last time. You know, we're not going to go through this year after year after year and keep getting frustrated. So this is really the last big push. And we're really counting on Packer Nation, Cheesehead Nation, to really come through. And on today, Friday, what's today again?
July 8th.
July 8th, 2016. We are asking all Packer fans to start penning some letters to the senior committee. Now, obviously, the senior committee, I mean, they're looking at back guys now in the 80s and 70s. That's where the seniors are now. But this is obviously someone from the 60s. We really want to see him go out there. Guys like Frank Cooney, guys like Dan Pompey, Rick Goslin. If you go to PackersTalk.com or CheeseheadTV.com, you're going to see a list of all of the people on the senior committees and their emails. Now, what we want is all of our Packer fans, all of Cheesehead Nation, to pen what kind of letters, Jamie?
Polite,
yes.
Respectful, but pointed mm-hmm. letters.
And if you check it out, go on Twitter. The Jerry Kramer for the number 4 HOF hashtag today on the 8th. We're going to see tons of articles about Jerry Kramer and what he meant to the Packers and what he's accomplished and why he's deserving. Please help us out and let's fill some inboxes of these senior committee members. It's our last chance. So it's a big day. What do you think, Jamie?
It's a huge day. I mean, this is the last year we're really going to have this campaign, and it would be great to see him get in.
Absolutely.
Or at least, you know, at least even be nominated. Like, let's at least get that first step happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Get that part in. Let's get him nominated this year. And I think it's very, very important. So a very special gift for you, to our Cheesehead Radio fans, is we actually had Jerry Kramer on the show a few years back, and we'd like to bring that interview back and let you listen to that. So it's kind of exciting to go back. Jamie was there.
Yeah.
So was I. Jersey Al, John, and Holly all interviewing Jerry Kramer. So we're going to get the Wayback Machine all hooked in here, and we're going to get the time coordinates set, and we're going to go back in time for a little conversation with Jerry Kramer. You all set, Jamie?
I am ready as I'll ever be.
All right. Lock and load, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jerry Kramer.
Cheesehead Radio, Packer legend.
All right. We here at Cheesehead Radio are honored tonight to have with us a true Packer legend. And thank you very much for joining us tonight, Mr. Jerry Kramer, Super Bowl champion, Packer Hall of Famer, renowned author. Thank you for being here tonight, sir.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on. Nice to be with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for being here. As I said, my name is CD, and we have Jamie is here, Holly, Jersey Al, and John, and we'll just shoot some questions at you, and we'll look forward to your answers. I'll start us off. I was born in 1968, so I kind of missed the glory years.
You were at the ball game in 68, weren't you?
I was. I almost was. Interesting story there.
Were you still inside your mother's belly, or were you outside?
Honestly, and I will tell you, sir, honestly, my mother had a ticket for the Ice Bowl, and she refused to go because it was too cold, and she was 8 months pregnant with me.
Wow.
Honest and true. True story. My dad went alone. I could have been there, sir.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm interested in what life was like in Green Bay in those days. I mean, obviously, growing up, it's quite a public place, and there's a lot of access with players. What was it like for you as a player back in the 60s in the glory years? Was it kind of a rock star treatment, Beatles, or was it a little more, I guess, maybe low tone?
No, there was excitement, an excitement and an interest in the whole city and the state, for that matter. And the things locally at home, you'd go into a dry cleaners and leave your clothes and come back two or three days later, and they'd say, that's on the house, there's no charge.
Wow.
And you'd go to a bakery or, you know, just fundamental stuff. No, Jerry, let us take care of that. So it was uncomfortable, kind of, to have people be that nice to you and that considerate and that thoughtful. But you learned to say thank you, that they were enjoying it as much as you were. So it was a wonderful time. Plus, you know, we were kind of on an ether. We had won so many championships, and we thought we were invincible and thought we'd never have another poor day, mama, and 100 things. So life was at a high point. And those Super Bowl wins put you on an emotional high that is with you the rest of your life. So that was probably what the exception of my wife and my children, one of the high points of my life.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, Jerry, this is Jersey Al here. So first of all, thank you again for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you.
Thank you.
Based on you're welcome. Based on CD's story, it seems like I was probably the only one alive while you guys were playing through the early 60s. So I'm probably going to ask you a lot of old time questions. So I hope your memory is sharp tonight.
Well, let's test it.
Okay. Your first season in Green Bay under Coach Scooter McClain has been described as a country club compared to Vince Lombardi's arrival the next year. Describe for me, if you would, the first time you met Lombardi and your initial impressions.
Well, you're right about the fact that the 58 training camp and season was more like a celebration and a wonderful time. And so that was my first season, and I assumed that was what professional football was all about. And so I thought, boy, this is fun. Let me have a Miller Lite, and we'll do the twist and keep on losing. But I'm playing pro ball, and it was for a kid from northern Idaho, a little town of 3,500, 4,000 people. It was a huge step into the limelight. So it was pretty sensational. And in the off season, I happened to go to a dinner at the last game of the prior at the 58th season with Horning and Curly Lambeau and McGee and Taylor and Fuzzy and Ron Kramer, Max, at Don Dahl's Ram's Horn. Don Dahl was a linebacker for the Rams and had a restaurant called the Ram's Horn. And we thought Curly was going to come back because he wanted to come back. And he told us that night he wanted to come back. So when they informed me that they had hired an assistant coach from the New York Giants who had never been a head coach before except for high school, and they had let Curly Lambeau walk out the door, I thought they were crazy as hell. So I get back to Green Bay, and first of all, I have some negotiations with Coach Lombardi. He sends I made $8,000 my first year, and he sends me a contract for $8,300. I sent it back, he sent it back. I sent it back, he sent it back. We did this about six times. He gets on the phone and says, what the hell's going on here? I said, Coach, $300 raise, that's not really very exciting. I said, I need some more money in that. So we argued over that a little bit, and I got acquainted with him, and we had just it was like a prison camp when we went there. It was be here at this precise moment, and if you're not 15 minutes early, you're going to be fined. And if you're not here and you're not in bed, you're not everything. And so all of a sudden, we went from a country club to a death camp or something close to that, as we thought. And he was extremely difficult to get along with. Joe Francis, quarterback, Morgan State, and I found out that rookies were supposed to report 3 days earlier than vets. I know this is a long story, but hang with me. And so Joe and I decided to go back to Green Bay 3 days early and play some golf and drink some beer and have some fun and relax. So we walk into the Packer offices down on Walnut or somewhere near the downtowner motel, and Jack Vanisi, who was the general manager and scout at that time, tells us that the dormitory isn't open, that it won't be open until tomorrow. And we're standing there arguing with Jack, saying, we'll open the dormitory. Well, it's not open. It's not supposed to open until tomorrow. You guys are early. Well, Jack, we need the place to stay. Open the dormitory. No, we can't open the dormitory. I said, Jack, those motels cost $8. Boy, what do you expect us to do? You expect us to take care of that? So Coach Lombardi walked by at about this time. He didn't look at Joe. He didn't look at me. He said, what's the problem? Well, they don't have a place to stay in the dorm. Well, open the dorm. Give them a place to stay. And he never looked at us. He never made contact with us. He never acknowledged us. He just went on. So the first day, Joe and I go out and play some golf and go drink some beer and have a pretty good time and think everything is just about right. And the second day, as I come down the stairs carrying my golf club, Coach Lombardi is standing at the bottom of the stairs. He said, where the hell do you think you're going? Well, Coach, I was going to go play some golf. Like hell you are. You're in the dormitory. You make all meals, all meetings, all practices, all curfews, just like everybody else. Now go get dressed. So Joe and I got two extra days of two-a-days. And these are days where in the morning you wear a T-shirt and a pair of shorts, and in an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30-minute workout, you can lose 9 pounds. So we got a couple extra days of that, and that was my introduction to Coach Vincent Thomas Lombardi.
Goodbye, country club.
Exactly.
That's a great story.
All right. This is John. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it. Now that we've heard the beginning of how you met Coach Lombardi, what's the one thing you took away from your playing for Coach Lombardi?
There's a variety of words that fit. Commitment, consistency, discipline, perseverance, pride, character, perseverance. But the one that probably was the most impactful on my life was approval. It's kind of an interesting area for me because I grew up in a family where I was called a big, dumb, knotheaded, you know, on and on and on. My grandfather mostly when I worked with was a child, but I didn't have a great deal of approval or a great deal of applause in my life. And Coach Lombardi chewed me out pretty seriously one afternoon, and I had missed a block about four plays before, and then I jumped off sides. So he got in my face about 10 inches from my nose, and he said, "Mister, the concentration period of a college student is 5 minutes. In high school is 3 minutes, or in high school is 3 minutes. Kindergarten is 30 seconds. So where does that put you?" But put me looking at my shoes, being really down where I used to be when Grandpa yelled at me, right? And I wanted to play well, and I was working hard, and I was trying, you know, I thought I was, and it just really got me down. So I went up to the locker room, shucked my shoulder pads and helmet off, put my hand on my chin, elbow on my knee, looking at the floor, thinking about what I'm going to do next in life, because I'm not ever going to be a football player, and maybe I should find a new team or maybe a new profession. And I've been there about 35, 40 minutes, and looking at the floor, really deep in thought. And Coach had been out working with Barton, Boyd, and Carroll Dale, and wide receivers on pass pattern. So he finally comes in the locker room, and pretty much everybody's gone, except me and a couple guys, and I'm way down at the end. He comes down, pats me on the back of the neck, messes up my hair, and he said, "Son, one of these days you're going to be the best guard in football." And that statement was a combination of approval and a picture of what I could accomplish, a belief in me, a permission to be great, permission to strive, permission to try to be great. It just gave me a whole bunch of freedom in my life, and it started something burning inside of me, in my heart. It was almost like a flywheel. It and I had a warmth and a feeling in there till today. You know, it's something that he got started, and he got my motor started. And he did it with approval. One more thing, I made a kind of a study of asking coaches, Bill Parcells, Bobby Knight, 40, 50 different coaches, what they do to pump a guy up or get his fire going or get him burned. How do you create that hunger, that need, that want, that fire? And the guy that gave me the best answer was a coach from North Carolina, the basketball coach that retired about 8 or 9 years ago. I can't think of his name right now, but he was the winningest coach in the history of basketball at the time.
Dean Smith,
and you, maybe? Dean Smith.
Okay.
Dean Smith. I said, "Coach, how do you get your guys up? How do you get them pumped? How do you get them going?" And he says, "Shucks, Jerry, I don't know. All I've ever done is find behavior I like and applaud it." So if you got some youngsters at home, or mama, or some of your friends, there's nothing in the world like a little approval and a, "Hey, you're doing a great job. Hey, you're doing something special." It has a power that is surprising.
Wow.
All right.
Awesome.
Hey, Jerry, I got a question for you. If you played on 5 championship teams in your career in the NFL, 11 years with the Packers, is there, first of all those 5 championship teams, was there a team that you just look at and say, that was the epitome of Lombardi's Packers? And secondly, is there any one of those teams that could take on a modern-day NFL team and kick their butt?
Yeah, the first, and it's not so much a team as it is an example of a team in the Lombardi philosophy. And it was actually in 67, and it was at the Ice Bowl. We get the ball in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes and 35 seconds to go. And in the previous 10 possessions, a total of 31 plays, we gained a minus 9 yards. Almost since halftime. I don't know exactly when it started, but almost since halftime, we had run 31 plays and gained a minus 9 yards. Wayne Larrabee told me that, and I said, Wayne, I don't think that's right. I think you got your numbers mixed up there. And he said, no, Jerry, he said, I think that's right. I said, go back to the original play-by-play sheets. He actually said plus 9 yards initially, but he went back to the archives and got the initial play-by-play sheets out, and we had gained a minus 9.
Wow.
Now, it's minus 57. We have 65 yards to go with 4 minutes and 35 seconds. Now, what do you do in that situation? You reach down into an area that you really don't know what to call it, and you're looking for something that you really don't know what it is, but you're hoping against hope that you can make it work, right? Well, I think that we reached down and we found preparation and commitment and consistency and discipline and perseverance and pride and character and Lombardi. So we went 65 yards, got down to the 16, and we got down to the 1 with 16 seconds to go and took it over in the sneak. And that is probably the proudest drive of my life. And it was because of a brilliant call by Bart Starr, a great block by Bob Skoronski on the left tackle on the give play, a call by Chuck Mersin, who came back and said, look, the linebacker's backing up, I can go outside, an effort by Donnie Anderson, an effort by Gilly, an effort by Bobo, Forrest Gregg, the whole organization. It was just such an incredible team effort in overcoming difficulty and adversity that's probably my favorite team and my favorite time with Green Bay.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you think that team could kick the butt of any team nowadays? Any of these prima donna modern teams?
You know, we were so basic and so fundamental, and we ran a lot of plays with options. If the guy went this way, the back went that way. If the guy went the other way, the back went this way. And that sweep and you know, so many things going for us. I'd like to take a shot at them. You know, I personally would love to have a shot at them. I played against some 300-pound guys, and fat doesn't make you quick. Fat doesn't make you strong. Fat doesn't do anything but make you heavy. So give me a fat boy every time. Get the line of scrimmage and pop him a couple times, and I'll take care of a fat boy. Now, the quick guy, I don't want to deal with the quick guy. He's a problem. So if you know, if you're thinking about the difference in size, that was never a question or never a problem for us. Be an interesting game. Be a kick in the pants.
Well, Jerry, this is Jamie, and might I just say this has been a pleasure, and thank you so much for joining us. But just kind of going off of that, what do you see as the biggest differences between the game nowadays?
Vicki, just get a little bit closer to the mic with you. I'm having a little problem. Your boy's voice.
I'm sorry. What do you see as the biggest differences between the game now and the way it's played versus the way it was played when you played?
I think the fundamental difference is the passing enhancement that the NFL has made to increase the passing game. You know, they allowed the linemen to hold virtually. They get their hands out in front of them and pretty much steer people around if they can move their feet. The inability of hitting a receiver beyond 3.7 inches downfield and the protection of the quarterback, all of those things have been to enhance the passing game. And they have been, to a certain extent, I think, catered to the television public and the scoring and the excitement of the game. It was a pretty good game when we played it, and we threw 20 times and we mixed it up and we ran the ball 40 times and we're successful at that. And the difference between strategy is, I think, much more interesting than changing the game so that it benefits one aspect of the game. I would rather that we had gone on down the road for a while and watch the evolution of the offenses and defenses to see how they dealt with the thing. And obviously it's always going to be a game of both passing and running and kicking and tackling and those kind of things. But it would have been interesting to see what the evolution of the game had become had we not changed the rules.
Interesting.
Wow.
All right, Jerry, I'm going to take you way back here. This is Jersey Al again. Way back before you ever met Lombardi, before you ever played college football, you had a couple of really rough accidents when you were a teenager that, you know, almost involved an arm being amputated and other such things. You were told that playing football would be out of the question, yet you persevered, you proved everyone wrong. Was playing football your main motive for fighting through those circumstances, or was it just something else driving you?
You know, it wasn't really a major thought, although I was terribly concerned when the doc drew on my arm and said that we were going to chop it off just below the elbow if any infection or complications arose. So that, you know, the prospect of going through life with the arm chopped off for a 16-year-old kid was not appropriate. I mean, not very exciting, no matter what the hell you were thinking about. So
sure.
I wasn't really thinking about football. I just, I was an adventurous kid, as I am today. I'm still, you know, looking at things, doing things, excited about things, got projects, got stuff to do. So I was always going, always involved. And a shotgun accident was just an unfortunate thing that I was very fortunate to survive it. I had a 10-gauge shotgun with number two shot, and I got both barrels of it up my side and in my lungs, my liver, my right side, and I just totally blew half the arm away. So that was just one of those things, and there wasn't really a great dream to, you know, I had been told by the scout, I mean, that year in the locker room that I was the kind of boy they wanted down at the University of Idaho. So that was incredibly big for me. And I think it was sophomore year. It was his junior year. I think my junior year, because the next year he didn't have much nice to say to me, but a new coach did recruit me. But it was a pretty traumatic thing, and wondering what I was going to be able to do and how we're going to recover from it. But the other incident you talk about is I was chasing a calf. I wanted to go swimming evening. I wanted to go down to the beach. We had a beautiful beach in Sandpoint, and a lot of the kids went down swimming and, you know, 5 or 6 in the evening and spent 2 or 3 hours. And we had a calf that was out of the pen, and I couldn't catch it. I'm not a roper. I'm not a cowboy. So I was trying to run fast enough to grab it by the tail and get it back in the pen. Felt like I was strong enough to kind of direct it to where it was supposed to be. And it stepped on a 1x6, and the sharp spear-shaped end caught me just above the groin and came within probably a half inch or so of coming out my back, going from lower to higher, I mean, from just above my groin to probably mid-back somewhere. And it would have entailed some operations to remove a 7.5 inch splinter that had lodged along the spine and was causing me a great deal of pain, but they didn't go down from the point of entry to the incision, so they missed a couple slivers. And later in Green Bay in 64, we had like a 4.5 and a 7.5 inch sliver that was removed in 64, and had 9 operations that year. And so I got very well acquainted with some medical establishment. But I did survive. It was a colostomy. It was a tumor. It was a whole bunch of ugly things. But, the whole question, there was a drive to play the game. It was part financial and part dream. You know, I didn't have a hell of a lot to do with myself at that time. So when I go back to training camp that year, Coach Lombardi tells me, go home. We'll take care of your hospital. We'll take care of your salary would take care of everything. Go home. No, I'm not going home. What do you mean you're not going home? Well, Coach, if I go home, I'll never play again. I missed the whole season last year. If I miss another season, that'll be it. Well, I can't count on you. Well, I don't care. I need to play. Well, I can't count on you. I just wish you'd go home. We did this for about 30, 40 minutes. And finally he said, I tell you what, I'm going to put you with the defense. And I said, great. I've always wanted to play defense anyway. So I went out and joined the defense, and our tradition was to run three laps before we started calisthenics. And so the first thing you do when you hit the field is run three laps. I ran about maybe a half a lap or three quarters, and my lungs seized up, and I started choking. I couldn't breathe. And Don Chadley came over to me, who was my roommate, and said, "What's the matter, pal?" I said, I can't breathe. And I couldn't breathe. My whole chest and lungs were kind of choked up. And he said, "Well, pal, you don't need to do this whole thing, but between you and I, we'll do what one of the other guys do. I'm a kicker, and I don't have to do anything. So you and I will do what they do." And so if they did 25 push-ups, I'd do about four or five, and Don would do 20. If we did 50 side straddle hops, I'd do 10, and he'd do 40. So in a period of about 3 weeks, I gained 15 pounds, kind of got my health back, and they put me back on offense. But my teammate, Don Chandler, pulled me through that knot hole, and really I would have been embarrassed. I would have been uncomfortable, totally unable to do the exercises or totally able to measure up in any way. So if it hadn't been for Don, I don't know what would have happened. But Don Chandler saved my life.
Wow.
John?
This is John again. There's a question from the audience, and I'll ask it for them. They want to know who your favorite quarterback of all time in Green Bay is.
Got to be Bart Starr.
Let me give you one statistic.
I know Brett. I love Brett, and I've had some great times with him, and I like Aaron Rodgers a lot. And I liked some of the older guys, too, back to Arnie Herber and whoever. But Bart Starr, in championships, playoffs, games to determine titles, or Super Bowl, threw 244 passes and had one interception.
Yep.
And that is the kind of quarterback that we needed with our team, with our organization, with our running game. He was absolutely perfect for us. And so that's all I have to go by, is what he was for us. And he was bright. He was he wasn't very loud. He was a general. And I think he was a wonderful quarterback.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, this is CD again. This is always a question that intrigues me. But you had a chance to line up against a lot of players who probably came in with a lot of hype, and some of them worked out, some of them didn't. Was there a guy, either played on your side of the ball or on the defensive side of the ball, that you just looked at and said, this guy could have been the best, and maybe he got hurt or something happened and something derailed him along the way? Who's that guy that probably could have been that Packer that just, for whatever reason, didn't make it?
Ron Kramer, not that he lined up against me, but was probably the premier tight end in the universe, 61-62. He asked to be traded to Detroit to try to save his marriage. He was having a difficult time with his wife, and she didn't like Green Bay, and so he was traded to Detroit at his request. But he was a sensational football player and certainly one of the best tight ends I've ever seen. So that guy strikes me as somebody who is recognized by a few people. You know, he had a sensational ball game in 61 in the championship, and Horning won the, MVP, and he said it should have gone to Ron. But Ron Kramer was just an incredible talent that never really got to play long enough or get the credit that he deserved.
Wow. All right. Thank you.
Okay,
all right,
guys.
Well, I'm going to take you back to, you were talking about Bart Starr, and you know, Bart Starr was my boyhood idol. I had pictures of Bart Starr all over my room as a kid. So tell me, Jerry, what's your favorite Bart Starr story?
When I first arrived in Green Bay, we didn't know exactly who Bart Starr was. Bart was so quiet and self-effacing. Any incidences in my 51st year with Bart that I remember. I don't remember anything he did being in the huddle. I don't remember him. He, to me, was like methane gas. He was colorless, odorless, tasteless, and virtually invisible. Oh. Next year, 59 or 60, I'm not sure when Bart took over exactly, but it was the next couple of years. Lamar McCann is there fighting for a job. Joe Francis and Babe Parilli from time to time. And we have a game down in Chicago with the Bears, and they have a middle linebacker in the mold of Urlacher and Butkus and Singletary and the great middle linebackers they've always had. His name was Bill George. And Bill went through a long pass down the sidelines. My defensive tackle stopped, turns around, looks down the sidelines. I look down the sidelines. Bart looking down the sidelines. Bill George is not looking down the sidelines. Bill George is taking a run from about 3 yards on the other side of the center back to where Bart had passed the ball, which is 5-6 yards. And when he gets to Bart, he lifts an elbow and perfectly times the elbow to hit Bart in the face and knock him about 5 yards on his keister. And I'm sitting there, I'm standing there watching this and not sure what the hell to do. And Bill George says something like, "That I'll take care of you, Star, you wussy." And Bart looks up and points at Bill George and says, "Blap you." And this is the first time and the only time in 50 years I've ever heard Bart use the bleep word, right? "Bleep you, Bill George. We're coming after you." And I go, "Wow, look at here. Look at this guy. He got some fire in him." And I said, "Bart, you better go," and he's bleeding down the front of his jersey just like a water hose. And I said, "You better go to the sideline and get sewed up." He said, "Shut up and get in the huddle." And I go, "Well, I've never heard Bart even get excited, let alone say, shut up." And so I said, "Yes, sir." So I got in the huddle, and he took it down the field about 9 yards with his lip bleeding all over his jersey, and we scored. And he went to the sidelines, and they got about 9 stitches in his upper lip and put a big white kind of gummy plastic-looking thing on it to keep it from bleeding, and never went in the locker room, never did anything, but showed me that he had some backbone. And so that's probably my memorable moment.
I have to be honest with you, Jerry. I knew that story, and you know, I read it in a book, Mud Bats and Blood Bats, and I was so hoping you would pick that one and just tell it. So great to hear that.
Very impressive to me. Very impressive. Yep.
Okay.
John?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Do you have time for one more question? Or
One more, and then we go to Scoop.
Okay. So I'll try to make this one quick, but it's not going to be quick. So how did the players feel when Coach Lombardi said he was leaving?
Well, there was a mixture of sadness and sadness, I think. It was, first of all, we understood that he got a interest in the team, and a 10% interest in the team, which was enough to make him and his family pretty much comfortable for a long time. And most of us were family guys and concerned about taking care of our family. That's what we do. That's why we go to work. That's why we do this whole thing, to take care of our family. So because he was taking care of his family, we understood why he had decided to go. Plus, things in Green Bay were deteriorating. We were all getting older. He may have been able to come back and new draft choices and new teams and 3 years down the road or whatever it was. But we had a coaching staff that didn't understand the game very well. Not Coach Bingston, but some of his assistants. Not Hog Hanner, but some of the offensive line coaches that were there, of which there was only one. So you can figure that out. Coach wanted to still have an impact on the game. I got in a fight with my offensive line coach about how we were blocking a play, and he chewed my tail. And next day in the sauna, Coach asked me how we're blocking the play, and I said, "We're blocking it this way." He said, "Go talk to him. Go talk to him, Jerry. Have him change it." I said, "Coach, I already did. I talked to him yesterday, and I got my butt chewed pretty good." He said, "Well, talk to him again." Okay. So we were doing some things that weren't very smart. We were aging. He had a chance to secure his family's future. All those things together I was okay with it.
All right. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Kramer, you can visit his website. It is at jerrykramer.com. Celebrated author, Green Bay Packer legend, and sir, we are just so honored to have you on our show today. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
I enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
Thank you. Jerry.
You're welcome.
All right. Good Bye-bye. Night.
And that was our interview with Jerry Kramer. I hope you guys all enjoyed listening to it again, or for the first time for you newbies out there. I know I really enjoyed listening to it again. My favorite part of that interview is when I went to ask my first question to Jerry, and I was so nervous, excited, and anxious that he kind of had to do a quick little reminder of, it's okay, calm down. Can you say that a little slower, please? And I'm really glad we didn't video record those because my face was bright red with embarrassment, but I was so giddy and so excited. So I could not contain myself.
Hey, this is a Packer legend. He's a Packer legend. I mean, there was just some conversation about retiring Paul Hornung's number. Did you see that a couple of weeks back? They were talking about whether or not we should be retiring number 5. I'm like, if Jerry Kramer doesn't get in the Hall of Fame, heck, we should give him something else that just really honors the impact this guy has had on the Packer organization and Packers fans for decades. We're gonna segue right now. Jerry's daughter, Alicia Kramer, and if you're lucky enough to be involved in the Packer Facebook-osphere, she's very active, and I've met her in person, and I cannot tell you what a sweetheart she is. I mean, this is a person who's really dedicated herself to her dad. Just probably one of the most sincere, outgoing, wonderful people you meet. And we were lucky enough to have her on the show, too, as she talked about her dad and her efforts. And we'd like to play that show for you right now, too.
Cheesehead Radio. Special guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, Packer fans around the globe, we are proud to bring on board right now one of my top 10 favorite people on the planet.
Whoa.
I made a list. I did. I made a list.
Okay.
Yes. You're on it too, Jersey Al. You're fine. She is the daughter of Jerry Kramer, has been leading a fantastic drive to get her dad into the Hall of Fame. But along the way, she has done some pretty amazing things, made a lot of friends, and created one heck of a great Packer support group. We are welcoming Alicia Kramer to the show. How are you, Alicia?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Super.
Super.
Welcome, Top
awesome.
Tenor.
Awesome. Yeah, I feel really honored. Thank
Fellow
you so
Tom
much.
So talk to us a little bit. Where are you at right now? What's going on with you?
Oh, I'm celebrating summer still. I'm in Boise, Idaho, and I'm working with Dad. But, God, I wish I was back in Green Bay right now. Everybody's talking Packers and training camp and family night tomorrow night, and I'm just dying here in Potato Land. I wish I was back in Cheese Land right now. Yeah, so it's good. Everything's good on our end. Just busy, really busy.
Good. So I know you're working really hard to get a lot of other. Sorry, this is Jersey Alish, and nice speaking with you.
Hey. Hi.
How are you? I know you've been working really, really hard to get other Hall of Famers to lend their support to your campaign, and I know one that's a special one to me, Bart Starr, offered a letter of support for your dad. Tell us about that conversation you had with Bart Starr.
Oh, that was really amazing. You know, I've gotten a lot of information back and forth between media and stuff that Bart Starr was backing Bob Skowronski, and I just felt kind of hopeless at one point, but there was always a part of me that thought that Bart championed Dad, and it was just a matter of getting hold of him. And then one day, he called us. I'd written him a personal letter, a handwritten letter, and had asked him to champion Dad, and I hadn't heard from him in in several weeks, almost a month or so, and I just thought, well, you know, Bart's busy or he's got too much going on or he doesn't feel like championing Dad, and so I just kind of let it go. And then I get that phone call from Bart. It's a 205 area code from Alabama, and I'm just like, oh, my God, it's Bart Starr. And I'm all nervous, and it was just like talking to a friend, and he had told me, you know, this is the second time that he had told somebody this, but he had written a letter on behalf of Bob Skoronski, and he had written a letter on Dad's behalf, and he has been doing this ever since the Hall. You know, these guys came up for votes, and he said that he would continue to do it until both of them went in, and it just, it was surreal. Because I also, like a lot of people, hold Bart on a pedestal. But at the same time, I've seen him at golf tournaments and alumni functions, and he just treats me like one of the kids. And so there's both of those aspects. But to know that he championed Dad, and then for a lot of Packer Nation to jump on board after that, it just it made it very emotional for me. It just... It made my campaign in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I can see how it would. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a hell of a guy.
Alisa, this is Jamie here.
Hey.
I had read an article, an interview that you had done, and you said that your dad kind of took pains to kind of grow you guys up outside of the limelight of his career. So that, like, at what point did you kind of realize that your dad was the legend Jerry Kramer? Like, how did that kind of come about? I can't imagine being a kid and realizing, whoa, my dad's, like, famous to all these other people.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, we grew up in Idaho in a small little town of about 1,500 people on a ranch, and we were pretty... away from the limelight and media and Packer fans. And, you know, growing up, I knew that Dad was autographing or signing his name, and I knew he had this special ring, and it was really neat. But then it was, I think maybe I was about 12 or 13, and I really started putting the pieces together. And then about that time, Dad took us back to Green Bay. And I got to go into Lambeau, and I got to see fans come up to Dad, and then I just started putting all the pieces together, and then, you know, learning about football, learning about Dad's teammates, learning about Coach Lombardi. It was just, it was pretty surreal, and it still is today. Still, you know, for Dad to have that much support, it's unbelievable, especially living here in Idaho, kind of, you know, way away from Green Bay and the Packers and stuff. You know, we'll be in Costco, and people will walk up to Dad, and they're Packer fans or they're fans of football, and it's pretty amazing to see that, even today.
Awesome.
Alicia, this is John. It's great to finally talk to you.
Hey! Hi, yes. John!
You've been tweeting back and forth for about a year or so now, and, you know, it's good to finally get a voice to the Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Something like
that.
Yeah,
I sure appreciate you.
Nope. When I started following you, your campaign, not that it was small, it was already in progress, but I would say in the last 9 months to a year, it's really exploded. I mean, your follower status on Twitter is tripled from what it was when I started following you. Your campaign has hit a number of media markets. I've seen it in papers. I've seen it online. Did you expect as much media attention for your campaign as it's received when you started doing it?
No, honestly, I didn't even expect to get out of Boise. I just thought that, but I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect. I hoped that I would reach Packer fans and football fans, and it would turn into this, but I had no idea. But I did hope for it, and, you know, I've just been taking advantage of every opportunity to do an interview, whether it's radio or newspaper or TV, and that's how it has grown. And it's not like a million people following me, but it's a few thousand awesome people who know about football history, who know about Dad's career, and who knows what he contributed to the Packers and to Lombardi Sweep, that are really helping me make this happen. And that's my goal. Is the one thing I hear more and more often is that people already think Dad is in the Hall of Fame. And social media has been amazing reaching those people and letting them know that Dad isn't in the Hall, and here's what you can do to help me get him there. And it has been exponential. It's, you know, Facebook and Twitter and whatever else I can do, media, like you said, it's really all help.
Perfect. Excellent. Alicia, this is Al again. Now, I know your dad was a little reluctant for this whole campaign, and I know he also kind of said to you, well, you know, you can give this one more try, but if it doesn't happen, we're just going to drop it and go fishing, something like that, I think I remember. You put so much effort into this. How easy or difficult would it be for you to close the book on this if it doesn't happen?
Oh, it would be very hard, especially at this point. There was a gentleman that did a letter writing campaign, and it took him 7 years to gather 45 letters from professional football players in the Hall of Fame to get the guy that he championed into the Hall. Mm-hmm. And we've done 32 letters in about 5 months. And that's all because of internet and the access there and, you know, emails and reaching out to people. And his dad didn't get it this year. We're just so close and reaching, you know, all these guys who could help dad, and we're building momentum and stuff, that I would just hate giving it up. But, you know, again, it's not about me. It's about dad, and it's about the way he feels about it. And I have to respect that, even if I don't like it.
I was going to say, does that mean you're just going to ignore him and do it anyway, or? Which we wouldn't mind. You know, we'd still be behind you, of course.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, you know, there's a certain group that they champion football players who've been running, who've been eligible 50 years or more. And so if dad didn't make it this time, there's that special group that would go and they would champion dad for the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, even if I stopped, there'd probably be another group that wouldn't try to do it. And so I just, you know, it's really, as much as I've enjoyed doing this and loved seeing what it's done for dad, and he's loved seeing the support, it really has, you know, stopped our lives in a lot of ways. Every day it's something. We're getting a letter or writing a letter, or we're tweeting out or Facebooking out. And it's been a blessing in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways it's taken us away from our life. And so I have to decide which is more important. My dad is 76, and, you know, the NFL projected his lifespan of, you know, 45, 55. This is quality time that I have with him right now. And do I want to be spending it, you know, out doing other things, or do I want to go fishing with him? Do I want to go golf with him? Do I want to have dinner and not worry about, you know, tweeting out to 10 other people that I'm trying to do? I don't know at this point which is more important. I'd really like him to have this, but the quality time of spending with him is diminished because I'm doing other things. So I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think you kind of started to touch on a little bit my next question. I think we'd all like to know, how is your dad doing, you know, health-wise and with everything, and how are you guys kind of feeling about, you know, like your gut about, you know, August 22nd?
Well, I'm actually pissed at dad at this point. He, like I said, he's 76, and he's doing so good, but he needs a hip replacement so bad. I don't know if any of you guys have seen him at golf tournaments and stuff floating around Green Bay, but he's limping, and he needs a hip transplant or a hip replacement really bad, and he's not doing it because he, you know, there's a part of him that fears. Dad has had 22 major operations in his life, and most of them are football related, and he's come close to dying a couple times, and there's a fear there, even, you know, with it just being a simple, from what I've heard, a simple operation to do, the fear of an anesthesia or a hospital-acquired infection or something like that is preventing him from doing it. But his quality of life is going down. He's not being able to get out and play golf. He's not being able to fish like he used to. But other than that, dad is sharp as a tack. You know, he's got facts and figures off the top of his head. He's going. I mean, he travels and does more than most, even my, I'm 39, and dad does more than I do in a day. You know, he's amazing. He leads the life of three people. He just has that work ethic and that will and that go, and it's really good. As far as the campaign, you know, that's really hard to say. I so much believe that we're going to do it this time, you know, that Dad will be nominated. But we've been through this 10 times before, and we thought 10 times before that this was going to happen, and we were so sure that this was. So it's just really, it's hard to get excited. It's hard. I mean, there's part of me that's giddy, don't get me wrong, but every time a letter comes in or people tell me that they've sent in a petition or a letter or something, I get giddy. But part of me is just saying, you know, don't get excited. Wait till we get nominated. You know, wait till Super Bowl, they announce his name, and then you can celebrate. And I think Dad has that same feeling, same mm-hmm. attitude.
Yeah, I understand that. I live in Cincinnati, and the Packers are coming the day on the 23rd, the day after the announcements. So I've uh-huh. already planned that I'm celebrating the announcement with the Packers the next day. So you guys can be a little hesitant. I'll be super like, oh, no, it's already happening for you. So.
Awesome. Well, you know, I've thought about having a party, and I thought about getting a bunch of friends together, people who've helped, and, you know, here in Boise, and we're going to go down to a bar and have a couple drinks and whatever. Not me, but just everybody around. But I thought, shoot, if Chad doesn't make it, what am I going to tell everybody? We'll just, you know, it'd be awkward. It'd be weird. And then so I just said, well, we'll wait. We're just going to wait on it. So, but that seems like such a far time, you know, far day off. August, mm-hmm. say, I think 22nd is the date when we'll know. And it just seems forever somehow.
Yeah. Hey, Alicia, this is CD again.
Hey.
You've probably put some thought into this, but what is your thought on the process that a player has to go through in order to get into the Hall? It is basically in the hands of, correct me if I'm wrong, is it like 50 senior sports writers?
You know, 43,
sorry, thank you. And
yeah.
It was around there.
Right.
But I mean,
yeah.
Think about the other people that could be on this committee. There could be former coaches. There could be people who are in the NFL, maybe on the board or even Roger Goodell, people besides sports writer who are knowledgeable. Cripes, you could even have fans. You know, like any all-star team usually has part of a fan vote. How's that affected you knowing that basically that fate is just in the hands of some journalists who may or may not just have a perception of your dad and just saying this is or this isn't going to happen until, you know, we feel enough time has passed or whatever?
Right. That's really a tough question. I really, those guys have such a hard job. There's more and more players each year and deciding but to me, I think it should be ex-football players who are deciding who are going in and out of the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not knocking the writers. I just think that men who played the game and who know the game by playing it and know the players, I think that they have more of an ability to judge who goes in and out. But, you know, that's not the way it is. And a lot of these guys have been doing this, like Peter King and others who've been doing this for years. And they know stats, and they know other players, and they know the history. And so they're doing a good job. I don't knock them. I don't say that they don't belong there. It's just the way that it started out, the Hall of Fame started, and it has continued. But I really believe that, in my opinion, that it should be other football players. I don't think fans, and I don't think, you know, anybody else. I really think it should be football players who decide who they let in and who they keep out. That's just my opinion.
All right. Al, you know what? I think, there you are, sir.
You muted me?
I did. There's some.
How dare you?
I'm sorry.
How dare you?
That's what you get for arguing with me before.
Yeah, I know. I've been punished. Oh, well, not the first time. Alicia, real quickly, I don't think any of us here have had the opportunity to meet you in person. Do you have any plans to come to Green Bay, maybe throwback weekend when I think most of us will be there? which is the Saints game. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you know, that's what's been hard about this, is I've really gotten to know some really awesome people through Twitter and Facebook, and but it's been on kind of a superficial level, and I would really love just to come back and hang out with you guys, and I don't know that I will this year. I've got some personal news I haven't shared with anybody, but I'm about 4 months pregnant.
Congratulations.
And so I just kind of, you know, I really want to come back, but I'm making my nest here in Boise and preparing for that. The baby's due December 30th, and I hope maybe to come back for the alumni game and hang out and eat 5 or 6 brats, but I don't know that, you know, I'll be able to do that. I just don't know what this all holds for me, but I'm excited, and you know, it gave me a chance to thank you guys face-to-face, which is the way I like to do things, is to see people and look them in the face and get to know them and hang out with them and say thank you for all that you guys have done to support me and to support my dad. It's meant a lot to me, and I would love to come and share a game with you guys.
Yeah. Well, number one, I have gotten a chance to meet you, and that was awesome.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Number two, you have not told anyone you're pregnant, and you just announced this on Cheesehead Radio.
Yep. I've been waiting to do that, and you guys are my friends, and I know it's a little, you know, but I've been wanting to do that, and I'm going to announce it. I mean, I can't hide it anymore. I've got this baby.
Well, we couldn't have told based on, you know, just sitting here. We couldn't tell.
Yeah. You were hiding the pie from us.
I mean, yeah, you hit it pretty well on the radio.
Well, if I do any more media interviews, the only thing I'm going to be able to fit in is my dad's XL jersey. it's awesome, though. It's an amazing experience. Dad freaked out. He turned white. His knees started to shake, and he started to cry a little bit. But it's actually a real blessing, and I'm glad to share it with you guys.
Oh, it's awesome. And all
I'm honored.
Congratulations. Yeah. Everyone in the chat room is just absolutely excited and saying congratulations, too. Before we end this, I wanted to give you one opportunity. You and I talked a little bit in email about something else you're working on right now with the Jordan family. Did you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, that I appreciate that. That's really important. That's something Dad and I started working on, that a lot of the Super Bowl II team has picked up on. Olive Jordan, who is Henry Jordan's wife, she has either Lou Gehrig's disease or what's that, Lyme's disease, or both. And she, you know, was married to Henry for a number of years, and then he passed away. Well, under the Burt Bell, Pete Rozelle pension, she doesn't qualify for any benefits or anything like that. And she has this terrible wasting disease, and her family is really struggling to pay for her medical bills. And Dad and a bunch of the other guys from the Super Bowl II team are having an autograph session in Waukesha at Waukesha Sports Cards. And they've all decided to contribute money towards Olive and her family to help with those medical expenses. And I think it just shows what those guys shared. You know, it's 45 years later, and these guys are still looking out for each other and their families. And I would hope that Packer Nation would come out and support that autograph signing, which they're doing at Rob's sports card shop. But I would hope that people would donate some money and help Olive and her family get going again. You know, Bart Starr is going to be there, Willie Davis, Dad's going to be there, Boyd Dowler, just a number of Packers from that Super Bowl II team that are awesome guys that are really chipping together to raise all of some money, and I'd hope people go out there and support them and support Olive.
All right. Well, first of all, let me just say thank you very much. And I am, I don't know if you notice, I have a jar here with a little bit of money. This is our F-bomb jar that we've been using for the past couple of years. And every time we say, for the last 2 years, every time we say the word Favre, we have to put a quarter in. And
awesome.
I'm kind of counting the money right now. And I just want to say that we would like to make a donation
to Henry and Olive from us here at Cheesehead Radio. And I've got the last little bit right here. Hang on. Yeah. Okay, it looks like John was putting in pennies again. Sorry about that.
John.
Yeah. I believe this is $52.39.
Wonderful.
And if you would just throw me an email or something like that, we will get that out to you tomorrow. And is there any place that our listeners can go to, a website or anything that they can go to maybe make any type of donation?
We don't have a website set up yet, but I'm sure that I'll be able to get that. And if you follow me on Twitter or check me out on Twitter, I'll be able to give you guys that information. Right now, you know, it's Waukesha Sports Cards in Waukesha, and they're getting it together. And they're you can send your donation there and just make it in care of the Jordan family. And thank you, you know. Quarters and dimes and dollars count. It goes a long way when it all builds up, and that's what counts, and that's what I love about Packer Nation. We take care of our own, and that's why I'm reaching out to you guys. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, even John, your pennies count. This is awesome. If you are following Alicia Kramer, if you're not following her yet, please get on Twitter. It is Jerry Kramer, the number 4, and HOF is her Twitter handle. I expect to have at least 30 or 40 new followers for her, hopefully by the end of the weekend once some people listen to the show. Definitely worthwhile having you here. John, I'll let you take it away.
Okay. Well, my final question is this. When the inductees are named on the 22nd, and when your father's name is called out going into the Hall of Fame, after all the blood, sweat, and tears, after all the energy you've put into this campaign, just what do you think your reaction is going to be?
Well, Don, the August 22nd is if Dad gets nominated. If Dad gets nominated, we have to campaign all the way to Super Bowl, and that's when they'll announce the inductees. And so this isn't over. But if that were to happen, if that were to go, and Dad's name got called, that will be one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. Dad has been so good to me and so good to the kids, my brothers and sisters, and I've seen what he has done for Packer fans and for what he did for the Packer organization, and I just think that I can rest and just say, you know, I tried as best as I can, and we finally did it, and I'll just be one of the happiest campers in the world, and then I'll try to find my next project.
And sounds like you have a project on the way.
I have just a real quick follow-up, Alicia. If on the 22nd Jerry is named as a nominee, is there anything that we fans can do to then help? Will more letters be helpful at that point to get to the voters, or were we just trying to sway them to get him nominated? What can we do to help after this step?
Absolutely. The best thing that people can do is, you know, keep writing letters to the Hall of Fame. If you've written one, that's good. Encourage your buddy or your friend who's a Packer fan or a football fan. Tell them about our story and ask them to write the Hall. We'll still be accepting letters. And then the other thing is to share the story. You know, share it with people, aunts, uncles, the family dog, whoever listens. And just keep it going, and just keep supporting me and Dad and sharing it with people. That's how we got here today. That's how I met you guys, and that's how we'll get Dad into the Hall of Fame.
All right. Well, Alicia, from all of us here at Cheesehead Radio, this has just been pregnancy and money and Dad and holy cow, it's nice. Yeah, wow.
What a great start.
Yes, I know. This is fantastic. Best of luck to you in everything. Our thoughts and our prayers are with you and your dad, your whole family upcoming. And I said it in the chat room, I'll say it aloud. Every father should have a daughter as devoted as you are. And that is truly a blessing for your dad. Thank you so, so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it, and God bless you all.
All right.
Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you.
And that was our wonderful interview with Alicia Kramer, who we've been so fortunate enough to have on our show. And she's done such a great job being an advocate and campaigning for her father. And we're really honored to work with her this year, the last push to get this done on July 8th, Kramer for Hall of Fame Day. So we're asking anyone who is listening, you know, paying attention in social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, anything, write letters to the members of the senior committee. And remember, polite, respectful, but pointed letters about what Jerry Kramer meant to you as a Packer fan, to the team, anything. Share videos on Twitter, Facebook, put posts, anything that you want. But make sure that if you are on Twitter or Facebook, use the hashtag #JerryKramer4HOF, #JerryKramer4HOF on all of your social media efforts.
If you would like to head over to CheeseheadTV.com or PackersTalk.com, you can get a list of all of those members on the Seniors Committee. These are the people you want to write. Pen yourself a beautiful letter, include them all in, keep it nice and sweet and pointed and respectful. These are the people we want to be a part of it. And we're really excited about all the different, I mean, the blogosphere is a pretty cool place, but Acme Packing Company, Green Bay Packer Nation, Lombardi Avenue, Packer Chatters, Packer Net, Packer Ranter, Titletown Sawndoff, Ultimate Packer Fan Connection, all of these websites are participating and being a part of this. We're all standing as one for Jerry Kramer for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm really excited about today. This is a great day and nice to be part of it.
Let's make it happen. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show, ladies and gentlemen. Cheesehead Radio, we are coming back for, what is this now, our seventh season?
We're almost veterans.
We are veterans. Our career's almost over. We've outlasted many players.
We have.
7 seasons. Al, Jamie, and I coming back at you. We should be starting back up again in August, so please check us out over at PackersTalk.com. Once again, a huge thank you to Ticket King, TicketKing.com, for being our sponsor this year. Please check them out. Jamie, if you're coming into Green Bay this season, that's where you can get some tickets.
Well, if I get a break from the flooding and the craziness of the Red Cross and I can make it back up to Wisconsin, they will definitely be my first choice.
Okay, and I'll buy you your first beer. So thank you once again, Packer fans. Enjoy being a part of this with you. Let's make Jerry Kramer all day, all the time, a big thing today. Thanks a lot for joining us here on the Packers Talk Network. From all of us here at Cheesehead Radio, have a great day and go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.